Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
My next guest is one of the great Irish characters of New York City. So he's been an actor, a broadcaster, a writer, a campaigner, a hellraiser, I suppose, and a barman as well. He was the most famous McCourt from Limerick until his brother went and wrote Angela's Ashes. And to top all that, he was recently kicked out of a hospice for not dying fast enough. Malachy McCourt, you're very welcome to the show.
Many thanks, Brendan. Any day above ground is a good one. So if I see the ceiling in the morning, I get up. And if I see a coffin lid, I don't bother. Because, you know, if you hit your head on a coffin lid, it just leaves a mark.
Do you know what? It could kill a man if he hit his head in the lid of his own coffin. So rumours of your demise were obviously exaggerated. Were you really asked to leave a hospice for not being close enough to death?
That's the rule of hospice here. You get 6 weeks or 6 months, I forget. But anyway, my time, and I ceased all medical treatment. But anyway, I didn't die as of November 9th, 8th, to be more precise. Because one day, it's the same as any other when you're dead, but it's different when you're dying. So I didn't die. So it said, okay, out you go. I got the boot, and that's it.
It's
so
nice.
Here I am again, Brendan, talking to Ireland.
And it's great to have you talking to us. Isn't it nice that most people, they talk about, like, he died on November 8th or 9th or whatever. You're picking out the date you didn't die.
He lived on November 8th.
Did you think you were going to die?
No, I didn't. I just don't feel like it. You know, there's too much to do. And I have a family and beloved Diana, my wife, of 58 years. And I'm on the wireless now on every Sunday in New York on a WBAI with a guy named John McDonough. And John, oh, by the way, John, I was talking to him yesterday and we were trying to see, but I told him I was coming on with you, Brendan. Oh, he said, I listened to that show. He says, you run a great show.
Malachy, you can be honest here now. You were checking me out before you decided whether you should come on or not. Was that it? You were saying, this guy O'Connor, can I trust him? Was that it?
No, I wouldn't distrust. How would I distrust you, Brendan O'Connor, for God's sake? I mean, Jesus, the name betokens honesty and straightforwardness and decency, you might say.
Listen,
poor fella.
We should. I wish you were around over here. You could be my PR man. Listen, not to dwell on the subject of your slow demise, but is there something actually wrong with you? Are you sick or is it just kind of wear and tear at this stage? What are you dying or not dying of?
Well, I have a disease called IBM, which I thought was a stock on the stock exchange. But it's a disease called inclusive body myositis. It's a muscular disease and your muscles waste away. So I was diagnosed with that. And about 7 or 8 years ago. And then I have cancer, prostate, and skin. Then I have a bad heart that's been doing things to me on occasion. So there it is. I'm a walking medical miracle. Still alive, but not walking.
you really are. You seem very chipper for a fellow with that catalogue of very serious-sounding illnesses. You're obviously not letting it get the better of you.
Well, it's... Brendan, I'm looking at the days, you know, and I live it one day. I mean, I forgot something. My fourth disease is alcoholism. I'm an alcoholic, but I haven't had a drink now in about 45 years. And so that's one. That's why I'm alive. And it's not too bad, you know. But I look at the days as if they belong to me. And I'm not I just don't feel like dying. All my brother Frank died, Mike died, Alfie died, Eugene and Oliver died, and my sister Margaret Mary, who was born here as well, she died in infancy, which causes my mother's breakdown and for us to go to Ireland. That's where Frank and myself grew up. And so consequently, we are considered Irish.
Yeah. I get the feeling, Malachy, that when you came back to New York from Ireland, and of course your upbringing was well documented by Frank and by yourself, when you came back to New York, you didn't have any great love of Ireland, did you?
The life in Limerick was quite miserable. We were on 6 and 6 a week, 6 shillings 6 pence, which was the rent. And we got relief of 12 shillings. And so therefore half of it went for rent. And then there was a magnificent 6 bob left for us to live on. So that was my mother. My father took off for England and he forgot that he had a family. That was the end of that. So there was Frank, myself, and then the two boys had come, Mike and Alfie. And there we were moving from, you know, slum to slum because we got in trouble all the time. And we were ill-nourished and, you know, bad teeth and rotten. I mean, there was to it. We had the magnificent diet of, as Frank said, a solid and a liquid, a bread and tea and bread. And that was it.
Yeah.
And we got a little bottle of milk at the Leamy School. It was lunch and a little bun with a raisin in it. And you just look for the raisin. And that was the fruit.
That was your 5 a day.
Yeah. And you weren't always lucky to get the bun with the raisin. So that was it. But there was a certain richness to it, Brandon, in a sense.
Was there, yeah.
Of language and all of that. I failed the primary certificate. So I left school at 13, as did Frank. But what saved us was the library coming to Limerick. And we couldn't imagine the books that were in it. It was lovely. We became omnivorous readers. And my library days finished when I got a book out and a fellow named Val Gannon in my class at Leamy's in 6th class said, that looks like a great book. I said, it is. I'm finished it. And it was a mystery. So I said, I'm bringing it back tomorrow. Oh, he said, could I read it? I said, well, no, I kept it. Oh, he said, I'll give it to you. I'll fast read it. So anyway, I gave it to him, and I went to him next day. Oh, he said, it was stolen. And that was how I got kicked out of Limerick Library.
Can you just reassure me that Val Gannon is dead and gone, because we could be libeling the man otherwise?
He's gone.
He's gone, yeah. Grant. I'm sure he was a good fellow otherwise, though.
No doubt.
Yeah.
So anyway, when I was in Limerick there last year, I took one of my books, A Monk Swimming, and I went to the library and I asked for the librarian and they said, what for? And I told them that I wanted to return a book. But it's not the one that I got. So here it is, 70 years later, I brought them a book to replace the one that had been taken years ago, and they were hysterical laughing at the whole thing, with the result that they made me a lifetime member of the Limerick Library. So there I am.
There's a great redemption in there, isn't there? A story of redemption
there.
Yeah.
Is it ever? Yeah.
So tell me then about making it in New York. So I was amazed. Your infamy kind of started on the Tonight Show, didn't it? Which would have been, was it Jack did. Parr back then?
It was Jack Parr, a huge show, on CBC, ABC, no, NBC. And but a couple of fellas that I knew were writers for it. And I met them at a house that, you know, was one of these fashionable joints out in Long Island on the beach there in the summer. And there was a kind of a thing. I got the reputation of being a great gas or great fun or witty and all that kind of business. So they were right. So I said, would you go on this show? I said, of course I would. So I said, you get paid for it. I said, that's lovely. How much is that? $300 and $20. I couldn't believe. I'd never seen a $100 bill yet, you know. Mm-hmm. This was 1958. So anyway, I went and I just, before I went on, I got luthered. And I was barely able to toddle along. But anyway, I got on the show. And I just walked out from behind these curtains with bright lights. I'm blinded. And I said, Jesus, where am I? And that it was that was that of the audience laughing. And Jack Parr had to come and get me because I didn't know where I was going. And he helped me up beside him. But anyway, he was very amused. And some of the newspapers picked it up. And they said it was hilarious and funny. And people told me, but the thing was, I never remembered what it was I said. So I had to ask the two guys who were the writer, and they told me. So there it was.
And what was the thrust of what you said? What did you talk about?
I think it was talking about how much I don't drink or something like that. You know? And, you know, so that was kind of the, why is it the Irish drinks? And I had to defend the Irish and drinking.
I see.
And so on. It wasn't because you're Irish you drink. It's because you drink and you got a disease. That was, well, I didn't talk about, I didn't know it then, but that was the beginning. And then I was asked back again, and it was, and I would always feel I had to have a few before I went on air. So I got kind of popular then. And then I was asked to do a radio program. And I said, well, I don't know anything about it. I said, just come in and we'll tell you what to do. So I got in and I did a monologue. And this is about years ago. But I was on that radio show for 7 years. Oh, and the other thing then, somebody had come to me in the meantime and said, how about opening up a bar? Oh, I said, okay. So we opened up this bar, and they called it Malachy's, and it was the first singles bar in New York.
Explain to me how it became the first singles bar in New York.
It was for me being on the on television, and people were curious to see if this cuckoo Irishman really existed. So there was a hotel for women around the corner. And they used to, young women would come in from there, and they made it popular and became a singles place, a rendezvous for meeting singles. And of course, a lot of those girls, this hotel had a rule, the girls had to be in by 11. And so a number of them, they would put on a coat and go out the back door and come to my bar, which was just Malachy's, which was just two blocks away. And that was it. It became boom. Then I couldn't believe that there were lines up around the block and everything else.
So were you having a good time with the drink, or was it a problem, would you say? Or does it not become a problem until it becomes a problem kind of thing?
I was out and about, of course. And I was having a good time. It didn't become, I didn't feel it problematic until really a couple of years ago. And then I said, oh my God, I am an alcoholic. So that's it. What is an alcoholic? It's a disease. And it's a disease that tells you you don't have a disease. So anyway, I got sober and I am very happy. I I am the happiest 91-year-old that you will find in this day, Brendan.
You absolutely sound like it. Listen, when you were still enjoying yourself with the drink, you were great friends with Richard Harris, weren't you? I suppose he had the Limerick thing in common.
We did. I met him here. I knew him in Limerick, but they were very much up in the social class. And Limerick was very class conscious.
Was it, yeah?
It was, oh, Jesus, the likes of me wouldn't be allowed in where they were. The laner, the dirty word is laner. You know, you were the lowest form of life in the world. And so here am I, uneducated, stupid, and broken shoes, and with short pants and scabby knees.
So then when you met Harris in New York, it was a more egalitarian kind of meeting, yeah.
Well, he said to me, I didn't know who you were, because we were both I joined Bohemian Rugby Club in Limerick, and he was All Crescent. And he accused me of being a snob because there were a number of Protestants in Bohemians. And that has nothing to do with it. But the man who recruited me was Ger South. And that was how I got into Bohemians.
Come here. It would take two Limerick people who are out in New York. You're the toast of New York. He's the toast of the acting world. And the two of you are still arguing about parochial affairs back in Limerick. Maliki?
Yes, hello.
Hi, we lost you there. So tell me about you and Richard Harris going around Europe on a bender, I suppose, to use the old-fashioned word.
Yes. Well, let's begin with, we did become friends. And then over the years, then, of course, there was the usual carousing whenever he came to New York, which was frequent between movies. So he said, he rang me up and said, get your arse over here. Over where? London. He said, I need you. I said, what do you need me for? He said, I'm getting a divorce, and that's all I'm going to tell you. I said, I can't just pull up my legs and go to London just because you're getting. He said, it's very important to me, and if you are a friend, you'll come. There's a ticket waiting for you.
Okay, we've lost Maliki there. But listen, he's worth hanging on to. Will we see if we can try and ring him back on a landline? Will we take a quick break, or will we see if we can get Maliki back?
Hello?
Maliki. Yes. So you had just said that he said there's a ticket there for you at the airport.
So I got on the plane, went to London, and went to his house. He had a big mansion there at the time. And there was Sean Connery and a few other buds. And I thought, oh, what a good see you, Sean. Because I knew him from the Molly Maguire's, because I made that movie. We were talking and everything. And I said, well, look, I'd come in overnight flight. So I said, I'm exhausted. I have to go and unpack. And Harris said, don't bother. Leave your cane, your luggage as is, your case. He said, we're going. Just come. Just don't ask any questions. Got in this huge Rolls Royce out to the airport, and there's a Learjet. So Harris, myself, and two reporters got on the plane, and off we went. I said, where are we going? He said, Paris. Well, okay. So we went, we got to Paris. I said, what are we doing? He said, I got divorced this morning, and this is a honeymoon without a bride. So that's so that was it. So we had a few gargles, and then we went carousing again. And then we went off, and we went to Antwerp, I think. And then after that, it was a loss. We were in Denmark, we were in Holland, we were in the south of France, we went to Rome and to the Vatican. I was floated most of the time, not knowing. So then he says to me, where do you want to go? We're in the midair. I said, Russia, Leningrad. He said, okay. He called the pilot, and he comes back, and he said, the Russian authorities have refused us landing. So they wouldn't let us in. Then we made a U-turn. Now what? And I said, get me to Shannon. I'm going to take a plane back to New York. I can't go on like this. So back we went to Shannon. We went to Dirty Nelly's, had a few pints. I got on a plane, came back to New York, and I really couldn't speak of what had gone on because it was just so rowdy.
I love the fact, though, that when you'd had enough of the bender and you couldn't take any more and you said, take me home, you stopped into Dirty Nelly's for a few pints just to put the tin hat on it.
That got me across the Atlantic, a couple of those pints. And that was it. You know, there was a week of total insanity.
Listen, Malachy, I believed you were wined and dined by the mayor yesterday in New York before marching in the St. Patrick's Day parade. I was thinking, at 91, have you finally become respectable?
That's not a word I use. Well, every year, the mayor of New York, no matter who he be or she be, has breakfast on St. Patrick's Day. And so that's where I was. I was over there for the breakfast. It amuses me because when I came here, having no education, no qualifications for anything, I just went, you know, dishwashing and so forth. But then it became then somehow or another, with all the stuff, the start of I didn't do it at all. It happened to me, and I'm just an accident. So going to this mayor's breakfast at the invitation of the mayor is so peculiar.
Listen, we won't say that you were hobnobbing with the establishment. We'll say that the establishment was hobnobbing with Malachy McCourt.
Well, they were doing the hobbing. I was doing the hobbing.
Jeez, man, are you? Come here. Among your many other talents, are you driving an ice cream van as well? No, Malachy.
What's that, Brendan?
Are you driving an ice cream van as well? No, among your many other talents and careers.
So listen, here's an ice cream.
I have to say, this is the busiest, liveliest deathbed I have ever been in contact with.
Isn't it grand, boys, to be bloody well dead? Let's not have a sniffle. Let's have a bloody good cry. And always remember, the longer you live, the sooner you'll bloody well die. Yeah, there we are.
Malachy McCourt, listen, I hope, will we talk again before the inevitable doesn't happen?
As they say, with the help of God and poor policemen. I'm looking benignly on the world now, so, and on Ireland.
Are you, yeah? Have you become one of those benign older people now, kind of angelic and good, yeah?
Ah, sure, I'm very, he's a nice old man. And that's a dirty word, nice, four letters. I never thought it would be applied to me, and I have to shut people up.
Okay.
So best to Limerick, and thank you.
Yeah, Malachy, thank you so much. What a lovely old man he was, wasn't he? Malachy, we'll talk again, okay?
All right, my right, son.
And listen,
thank
keep enjoying every day.
I will indeed.
Email Brendan@rte.ie.